The coronavirus is affecting every part of the Illinois economy, including farmers who sell to local markets. We'll hear how they're coping with shelter-in-place orders. Plus, we'll talk about some of the ways that fallout from COVID-19 is affecting people financially. And with many of us staying at home more than we're used to, people are rediscovering their gardens. We'll have two experts to answer your questions. Join the conversation at 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21st Show or email talk@21stshow.org. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Normal, and WNIJ in DeKalb. The news is next. Stay with us. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. The disease caused by the novel coronavirus continues to infect more people in Illinois. As we go to air Tuesday morning, the Illinois Department of Public Health has reported 73 deaths and 5,057 confirmed cases of the disease, though we still have to say the number of actual infections is likely much greater, owing to the lack of testing. There are consequences being felt across Illinois, in terms of health, of course, but also the economy and personal finances. Later this hour, we'll talk with a pair of experts about managing your money in a time of crisis. If you have questions, join the conversation at 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21st Show, that's 21st Show, or email talk@21stshow.org. But first, there are thousands of local food producers in Illinois. They're the people who sell at your local farmers market, roadside produce stands, and provide fruits and vegetables for local restaurants. In other words, they rely on community engagement to get their products on the market. And like many folks across the state, those farmers are struggling amid Illinois' shelter-in-place order and social distancing. To tell us how these local farmers are coping, we've invited on WILL's agriculture reporter, Dana Cronin. Hello, Dana.
Hi, Brian.
We're also joined by Leslie Cooperband, who co-owns and operates Prairie Fruits Farm and Creamery in Champaign. Hello, Leslie. And lastly, Liz Moran-Stelk is executive director of the Illinois Stewardship Alliance. Welcome, Liz.
Thanks, Brian.
So, Dana, I'm going to begin with you. As I understand it, farmers markets are deemed essential under Governor J.B. Pritzker's shelter-in-place order. So what exactly is the problem here?
Well, you're right that farmers markets are deemed essential according to Pritzker, and that was a huge relief to the local food community. But the problem here is that local food producers, unlike, say, commodity crop growers in the state who grow things like corn and soybeans, they really rely on engaging with their communities in order to make sales. So whether that's, you know, at the farmer's market or a local produce stand, some farmers even have so-called U-pick fields where they let people visit their farms and pick produce straight from the field. So you can see the problem here. These methods really rely on people leaving their houses, coming together, maybe gathering in groups like at the farmers market. And that's not really possible with social distancing in play. And also a lot of those local food producers, as I'm sure Leslie will tell you, sell a lot of their product to restaurants in their communities. And as we all know, restaurants are either closed right now or are limited to carry out. So that's really affected business for a lot of these farmers. But Brian, like you said, farmers markets are deemed essential and they are expected to open up in the coming months. I actually talked to the executive director of the Illinois Farmers Market Association yesterday, and she said markets probably will look a bit different this year. They're still working on coming up with the exact guidelines, but social distancing will definitely be ingrained in those markets, whether that's, you know, drawing chalk lines 6 feet around each booth or just being more careful about the actual exchange of goods. She said farmers markets, you know, are typically places for communities to gather together, and that this year that just won't be the case.
Okay, well, Leslie, I want to bring you into this conversation. First off, can you tell us about your farm?
Yes, Prairie Fruits Farm and Creamery was established in 2005. We were Illinois' first farmstead dairy, including any kind of milking species. And farmstead means that we use the milk from our herd, in our case our goats, to make our dairy products, primarily cheese. We are, our farm and our herd are certified through a program called Animal Welfare Approved, which emphasizes pasture-based production and high welfare standards. And we mostly make a variety of French-style goat cheeses. We make a little bit of goat milk gelato. We have lots of visitors typically coming to our farm throughout the seasons, and we currently attend the Urbana Farmers Market. About a little more than half of our business, maybe 60, 65% of our business is wholesale. A big part of that wholesale base has been restaurants and some specialty food, independent grocer, retail stores.
Well, see, I was wondering, where do you sell cheese at a time when restaurants are having to close dine-in options? Are you concerned that, that's going to affect your business?
It already is affecting our business tremendously. This is the time of year that our cheese is cheese production resumes. We are a seasonal dairy, so our goats are bred in the fall, and they have their babies in the spring, and there's about a two and a half month period of time that they're not actively producing milk. So come late February, early March, we start having babies, and we start producing milk, and hence cheese making resumes. So normally this time of year, we would be packing orders for restaurants and delivering in and around Champaign-Urbana and, more importantly, up in Chicago. Chicago's been a huge market for us for our cheese for restaurants. So that business has gone to zero.
To zero. Wow. So yes. What do you still do the goats still have to be milked? Does the cheese have to be made? Are you having to get warehouse space? What does that mean on the ground for you?
No. So, I mean, yet that's the thing is goats do not know that there's a pandemic going on, and they're having their babies. We're in full production. Well, we're not in full production yet, but we're on our way to milking over 100 goats this year. So we're making cheese. We've had to pivot to try to get more of our cheeses into retail stores, and we just launched an online website so that folks can order direct from us. We're partnering with at least one local food aggregator in Fairbury called Down at the Farms, and they service over 60 small farms. They have a website, and folks can order. Most of their business was restaurant-based, and so they're pivoting to try to get individual retail customers to order from their website as well. So there's been, you know, there is no, you know, unless we were to just dry up our goats and go out of business, there's just no way that we could put our production on hold. We have to go forward.
Well, Liz Moran-Stelk with the Illinois Stewardship Alliance, you've been listening to what we've been talking about, and I know the Alliance works to promote local food producers like Leslie. I wonder, what are you hearing from some of your other Alliance members?
Yeah, we're farmers like Leslie who sell to restaurants and schools are getting hit really hard. They have products ready but don't have the business infrastructure or marketing to really shift to direct sales. But the good news is that we're hearing from direct market farmers who sell CSA shares or sell food online, especially those who can deliver, are experiencing a boom in sales right now. And there's been an incredible demand for local food. But also many of those farms are going to be counting on farmers market sales for a good portion. And that's really not a guarantee for the rest of the year if people are either hesitant to go to farmers markets or if farmers markets don't make the changes that they are going to make markets safe.
Well, yeah. Can you talk a little bit about, is there planning going on? Do you hear people talking about the contingencies if this stay-at-home order continues beyond April 7th, which is the current cutoff, but a lot of people think it's going to go longer. Go ahead.
We have this moment. We're lucky to be right in between the end of the winter farmers market and the beginning of the summer farmers market are going to have. So we have this gap. And this is a really critical moment for market managers and farmers who sell at markets to be making plans to pivot to and to make plans to make the market really safe. So whether that's, you know, some markets are looking at metering people to keep, you know, sort of keep the limit so there isn't crowding. Some are doing pre-ordering online. Many are saying no samples, like no open food. There's some that are moving to drive-thrus. And the Illinois Farmers Market Association is going to be putting out some guidance for farmers markets to be able to say, you know, here's some ideas about things that you can do. And they really need to heed that and make those changes because despite the fact that the governor's order, you know, says that farmers markets are essential, you know, yesterday the mayor of Los Angeles canceled markets until they can prove that they're taking steps to keep people safe. And I think that's the right move. Farmers markets are going to, and it's going to be a struggle. And that's part of why we're excited that the Congress's, the Corona relief package includes funding for local food producers and for farmers markets to make these kind of changes right now.
So I guess the question, the bottom line is, though, is that if people are listening or wondering, will my farmers market in my community be opening? The answer is stay tuned. We just don't know yet.
Yeah, I think it's I we'd like to be able to say yes, absolutely. And that I think we're going to most farmers markets in Illinois right now are doing everything they can to open, to operate safely, to get the message out, because this is really a moment where not only people want local food, but it really is a moment for local food producers to show, you know, how much great product they have, that it's secure, that it's safe, and that we're here for you when people are looking for, you know, fresh and reliable food right now.
Dana, I want to bring you back into this conversation. You talked to some other local level farmers. What did they tell you?
Yeah, so Leslie, you are not alone in this. I talked to another farmer. Her name is Patty Marco. She and her siblings own and operate a farm called Wilsey's Farm Produce, which is located in Maple Park, which is about 60 miles west of Chicago or so. And they grow all kinds of fruits and veggies on their farm. They sell most of what they grow out of an old converted cattle barn on their property. Marco told me she doesn't know exactly how they'll be operating this year. And here's a quick clip.
Can I put my tub of vegetables out for a person to pick, or am I going to have to package everything so there's less handling by the public? I don't know. We don't know.
She told me that, you know, having to package all of those vegetables would require a lot of time and labor, both of which are in short supply during such a turbulent time for her. She also said that with planting season coming up, she's considering changing what and how much she'll plant just because of all the uncertainty. So I know that's also on the minds of a lot of produce growers.
And Dana, we heard Liz mention a moment ago about the federal legislation and helping farmers markets. Can you talk a little bit more about what the government is planning to do to help smaller farmers like Leslie, or are they?
Yeah, yeah. You know, like Liz mentioned, the government is helping, or at least they're trying to. In their most recent stimulus package, the third one passed last week, Congress allocated $9.5 billion in emergency funds to, and I'll quote, agricultural producers impacted by coronavirus, including producers of specialty crops, producers that supply local food systems, including farmers markets. And it goes on. But that's actually the first disaster relief package to explicitly include local food markets. The actual implementation of that plan, though, remains to be seen.
And Leslie, I wonder, what would you like to hear from government? What are you looking for as you continue to produce cheese on your farm?
Well, we are probably going to apply for some of the loan programs, the SBA programs. We want the farmers market to be open up. We want people to be safe. But we believe that there are ways for people to be safe and still attend the market. We want the if there's a role for government to help support some of the initiatives of farmers trying to come together to offer their products to customers collectively, we'd love for our local governments to support that. We need to get the word out just to the general public that this food is available and that it's fantastic. I mean, that's the other thing is, in some ways, this is our moment to shine. We have one of the benefits of our local food system is that we are resilient and that we do not have a long supply chain. We are very short in our supply chain, and in most cases, direct from the farmer to the consumer. And that allows us to be able to be flexible. And I know a lot of my fellow farmers are coming up with creative ways to get their product in the hands of people, but people need to know that it exists and they need to support it. And we need our retail grocery stores to be safe so that people feel confident that they can continue to go in there to shop. I've noticed when I'm delivering cheese to our local co-op, for example, that it's desolate in there. There's hardly anyone in there, and I think, and they don't have any gloves for mm-hmm. people to put on. There are things that could be provided to some of the retail stores, like gloves, that might make people feel safer, but there's just no gloves to be had.
All right. We're going to have to end the conversation like there. I'm afraid we have to end it there. That is Leslie Cooperband. She co-owns and operates Prairie Fruits Farm and Creamery in Champaign. We also heard from Liz Moran Stelk, Executive Director of the Illinois Stewardship Alliance, and WILL's agriculture reporter, Dana Cronin. Thank you all for joining us. You're listening to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. For 150 years, Busey has helped business owners and entrepreneurs navigate financial decisions, achieve long-term goals, and realize dreams of success. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
You're listening to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. The coronavirus pandemic has created financial challenges for people across our state and across the country. In Illinois alone, about 130,000 people have filed for unemployment benefits in the last few weeks. Many more have been unable to file claims because of the overwhelming demand. Whether you're figuring out how to pay your rent or mortgage while not working or having to pay more for health care out of pocket, this is an uncertain time for a lot of people. Both local and federal governments are looking at ways to help. Yesterday, the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation announced help for consumers struggling to make payments on their debts. On the federal level, Congress has passed, and the president signed on Friday, a roughly $2 trillion, that's trillion with a T, $2 trillion coronavirus response bill intended to speed up relief across the American economy. For more on what all this means, we're joined now by Annie Logue, a lecturer at the University of Illinois at Chicago and an author of a number of books in the Four Dummies series about finances, including Day Trading for Dummies. Also on the line with us is Ben Harris. He's a visiting professor at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. Ben is also the former chief economist to Vice President Joe Biden. Annie, Ben, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me again.
And just a reminder, you can always join the conversation. How have you been financially affected by the coronavirus? Please give us a call, 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21STShow. Ben, I'd like to begin with you. I wonder if you could talk more about the effect the coronavirus pandemic has had on the economy as a whole. I realize it's maybe difficult to quantify, but what are some of the different ways we can see it?
So there are two different things we can talk about. We can talk about a lot of things, but one of the obvious effects has been that a lot of people are losing jobs. And so you just mentioned last week we heard that from the week prior, there were 3.3 million new claims for unemployment insurance. This is unprecedented. In many states, you saw more than 1,000% increase in people applying for unemployment insurance. We expect a similar number to come out on Thursday for last week. This means about 6, 7, 8 million new people will find themselves on unemployment insurance relative to a few weeks ago. And our country has never experienced this type of massive increase in people that are out of work. This is almost unfathomable to economists. And I think we're finding that our unemployment insurance systems are not well equipped to handle this type of influx. States are scrambling. The federal government has allocated more money, but there just isn't the capacity there to deal with all the people who are out of work. The second thing is that we're seeing increasingly dire forecasts for the first half of this year. So when we were first concerned about the coronavirus, Goldman Sachs came out with a projection of what we would see with second quarter GDP growth. So how would our economy respond in the second quarter? Their initial estimate was minus 6%. Then they went up to minus 24%. They recently came out with an estimate which puts the GDP decline in the second quarter at over minus 30%. So the situation is growing more and more dire, at least for the first half of this year. But the good news is that we expect, at least at this point today, we expect a pretty robust bounce back. And so there is sort of a silver lining to all this, which is as bad as the recession is going to be, right now, most forecasters expect it to bounce back pretty quickly.
Annie, I wonder if people, so we heard Ben talking there about the sort of the economic dislocation that's happening. I wonder, are people at all different socioeconomic levels being affected?
It's interesting because it seems to be hitting a lot of people in the middle a little more than at the ends, which is a little unusual. But the fact of the matter is there's still huge demand for delivery jobs, driving jobs, basic healthcare, low-level healthcare jobs. There's actually huge demand for all healthcare jobs right now, but most people don't have the training to take the middle or high-level jobs. But so, and at the same time, people with more elite jobs can often continue to work from home. It's a lot of people in sort of these technical managerial jobs that require them to be on site, that require some education, but not necessarily an enormous amount of education. Those are the ones that seem to be hit right now. But again, we won't know all of this until all the claims come through because this is all so very new. We really haven't seen anything like this before.
Yeah, and like you're saying, indicating, and we heard earlier that there are probably claims we don't even know about because particularly in Illinois, there were so many problems with people getting on and trying to file them. If you want to join our conversation, please give us a call, 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us, 21STShow. Annie, in past conversations we've had about personal finance, we've talked about the importance of having some sort of emergency fund. But it seems like now might be one of those times when people might be having to dip into some of that money. Is that wise? Is that prudent?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the kind of extreme situation that might not be your absolute first response, but I think it's a valid response, especially as people are waiting for unemployment benefits to kick in, or waiting for their employers to benefit from the new Payroll Protection Act or Payroll Protection component of the CARES Act. It's possible that a lot of people who are unemployed will be called back fairly quickly, but it's going to take a little bit of time for their employers to apply for the loans and get the funding. So this would be a time to hit into your savings. My main advice would be to look at your retirement savings last. Don't touch that money unless you're absolutely at the point where you can't feed your children otherwise, because the tax penalties and the financial cost of touching that money is so great. The hope is that everyone will be back to work and thus able to retire at some point in the future. So think more about more liquid forms of money that you might have.
Well, Ben, we just heard from Annie there that, you know, if you need to dip into savings, that's one thing, but make retirement money dipping into that a last resort. Ben, can people think about even trying to save money at a time like this? And do you have any advice for how people might even consider doing that, or at least how they prioritize their spending at a time like this?
So, you know, this doesn't feel like the moment to save. But, you know, on the flip side, we've seen analysis that show roughly a third of jobs can be done at home. And there's still some people working out in the real economy, as Annie mentioned, doing deliveries and performing other essential services. And so if you're still getting a paycheck, I don't see any reason to stop saving and maybe even save a little more right now if you've taken care of your essentials. From a policy perspective, I think that people should be aware that there are a few different stages of the government response. And we're sort of at the worst stage right now where money has been allocated. We had a $2.2 trillion CARES Act, as you mentioned. And just for context, in 2008, when we saw the worst recession in a generation, the Recovery Act was $800 billion. So it was roughly a third of the act that was passed a few days ago. And that act provides widespread support for people who are unemployed, for small businesses, for large businesses, for hospitals. It takes a while for that money to make its way through the system. We probably should have been better prepared. It probably should have been passed faster. But the fact of the matter is the cavalry's coming. So for right now, if you're unemployed and you're waiting for your unemployment benefits, which, by the way, are going to be $600 higher than they would have been before the CARES Act was passed, now is the worst time. And in a few weeks, small businesses will be able to get their loans. As Annie mentioned, we might see some people come back on payrolls as that money starts flowing to small businesses. People will get their unemployment insurance checks. So the cavalry is coming. So now is really the worst time, and households have just got to do whatever they can to make it through. But things are going to start looking up, I think.
Well, you mentioned the business aspects of the CARES Act and the unemployment insurance. Is there anything else just for, you know, sort of everyday people that they should be looking for? And if so, what can they expect out of that?
Well, there's money for hospitals. And there are money for large businesses. And I know that doesn't mean a lot for everyday people, but the other big component for households is the stimulus check. And people have probably read about it or heard about it. The nuts and bolts are it's $1,200 per person, $500 per dependent. There is a phase out range. So if you're single and you're making more than $75,000 a year, or if you're married and you're making more than $150,000 a year, you won't get the whole check. But the thing that people should really know, and I think a lot of people are waiting on that check for support, is that for a small number of people, if you didn't file income taxes in 2018 or 2019, or if you did file and you had a different address on file with the Internal Revenue Service, you're going to have to take some steps to make sure you get that money. So if you haven't filed an income tax return in 3 years, you need to go out and file an income tax return just to get that money. And if you have the wrong address on file with the IRS, you need to correct that, because I know a lot of people are waiting for that money to come through.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We've been speaking with Ben Harris. He's a visiting professor at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management, and also Annie Logue. She's a lecturer at the University of Illinois Chicago, and they've been offering analysis about how the coronavirus has affected our economy and tips about what we can do in this financially stressful time. If you have questions for them, want to share how you've been financially affected by the coronavirus, please give us a call, 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21ST Show. Annie, getting back to the sort of personal finances, what should people do if they're worried about being able to make a payment, like on their credit card, for example?
A lot of economists are watching tomorrow very closely, because that's when payments start coming due on the monthly cycle. The first thing I would do is accept the fact that this might be frustrating trying to get through on the phone or trying to get a straight answer, because there's been a lot of changes and there's a lot of things up in the air. I would say that you need to call everybody to whom you owe money if you don't think you can make your full payment, and explain the situation and ask for some kind of forbearance or waiver of a late fee. And the reason that I'm stressing that you need to be patient is those are not easy calls to make, and you're going to be stressed and the person on the other end of the line is going to be stressed. And so a really, really basic tip is to just write out a few notes about what you want to make sure you say when you make the call, because that will help you control your emotions, because it's going to be stressful. I mean, we're hearing stories about people trying to apply for unemployment and they can't get through and they can't get through. And that's got to be so, so frustrating. But make the call. Call your landlord, call your bank, say, this is my situation, you know, and they, in most cases, do not want you to, you know, they know this is a short-term situation. They don't want you to go bankrupt on them. They don't want you to go dark. Their understanding is that when this economy turns back on, many people will have their jobs back, that once these stimulus programs kick in, people will have income again. In the state of Illinois, the governor has already said that landlords are not allowed to evict you. Many landlords are, I'm hearing anecdotal evidence that landlords are willing to accept, you know, waive payments or take partial payments. Again, I can't speak for all landlords because that's all anecdotal, but be upfront, tell them what's going on. If you can pay part of your bill, it's better to pay part than nothing. But again, you're going to have this conversation possibly a few times. But there does seem to be an understanding that everybody's in the same boat, and that unlike other financial crises that we've seen, the fact that we really are all in this together is actually on your side. And we that's not just something that we...
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Well taken. And we have just a few minutes left, and I have so many questions. But Ben, maybe in about a minute, is there anything people should be doing now if they're looking at that retirement account and seeing the downward lines, the up and down lines? What should people be doing if they're worried about their retirement?
Well, I think the first piece of information is for retirees to know that their Social Security is safe. And that even if you're on Social Security, you're still going to get the stimulus check, provided that you meet the income limits. Your Medicare is safe, so hopefully your basic needs will still be met. I think a lot of people saw the roughly 33% downturn in the stock market, and if you're relying on a 401k for income, you know, that's going to hurt. That hurt a lot of savers, but we saw a small bounce back. No one knows what's going to happen with the stock market, but if the economy does recover, the stock market will also recover. And in 2008, we saw that, where people who were patient and held on to their savings and didn't panic, they ended up being paid off in the end. But, you know, this is a tough time to be a retiree. And, you know, fortunately, you have your Social Security check coming in, and hopefully people have some savings to fall back on. But like everyone else, retirees are struggling right now, and that's not going to change in the near term.
Okay. And Annie, just in about 30 seconds, you know, the hardest part about all this is the uncertainty, I think. We don't know how long this is going to last. It would still be difficult. If we knew that this was only going to be a month, you know, it might feel more manageable. Just real briefly, what advice do you have when, you know, we don't know how long this is going to go?
Take advantage of this time to try to upgrade your human capital, as economists would say. I mean, this is a time, one great way to save a lot of money on your food bill is to learn to cook. And so if you don't know how to cook, this is a good opportunity to find some online tutorials. This is also a time to upgrade your work skills for when you go back. And there's so much available online for free. If you feel like you need better math skills, go to Khan Academy. If you feel like you need to upgrade your foreign language skills, go to Duolingo. But if you think that there's something that would help you be more marketable and help you upgrade your skills, you've got some time to do it.
This is the time, Groundhog Day, you can learn to play the piano. We've been speaking with Annie Logue. She's a lecturer at the University of Illinois at Chicago, who's also written a number of books in the Four Dummies series, and Ben Harris, visiting professor at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. This is The 21st. Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. With the stay-at-home order in Illinois, many of us have been looking for some new activities around the house or maybe out in the garden. WILL and Illinois Newsroom reporter Christine Herman, a regular guest here on The 21st, says she's been out in her garden with her kids and brings us this interview.
Mommy, what's it in a hole for the pumpkins to go? That's what mamas do.
What's your favorite part of working in the garden?
Pulling out the weeds. Oh, I can't get out. And working on a hole for the pumpkins to go.
What are the pumpkin seeds going to grow into?
Pumpkins. I think like 10.
No, throwing dirt. No throwing dirt.
It's gonna rain. Well, let's go inside. It's getting dark.
Thank you to reporter Christine Herman for that adorable interview from her garden, Pumpkins with the Pumpkins. We'd love it if you would share your quarantine projects. Send us an email at talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow. You can tweet us at 21st Show or use the hashtag StayAtHomeIL. We're rounding them up for a segment later this week. For now, if you're hoping to get started gardening like Christine and are wondering what might grow well in your yard or maybe in your window, we're joined by two expert gardeners. Ella Maxwell is a horticulturalist at Hare Nursery in Peoria, Illinois. We're also joined by Annette Donnelly, a volunteer master gardener and master naturalist for the University of Illinois Extension in Champaign. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Annette, from your personal experience, do you find that gardening can be beneficial in a stressful time like this?
Absolutely. And it's a great way for my kids and I. I've got a 10-year-old and a 12, almost 13-year-old. It's a great way for me and my boys to be outside together doing something active. And we really enjoy that.
And same question. What about you, Ella? Do you get a sort of Zen satisfaction out of gardening?
Yeah, I think so. I think most people really enjoy being outside. And as a horticulturist, I'm also a plant collector. So I'm involved in different plant societies and groups. And so I want to grow what I see when I'm out visiting, you know, at an arboretum or a city garden or wherever it might be. So, you know, I'm always looking for something new, and then I'm trying to keep alive what I bring home.
You know, Annette, we see on social media, you know, people are doing these sort of quarantine projects, a lot of baking bread, but we see a lot of images of people in their gardens where maybe in previous years they didn't feel they had time. As a master gardener, do you have people reaching out to you now, friends, family, asking for advice that maybe because they're at home more interested in getting back in the garden?
Yeah, we've got a lot of, we've got a kind of a robust social media group and a good online community reaching out to each other, what to start growing and such. And one project that I think is really interesting is herbs. So if you can buy a lot of the herbs in the grocery store now that are already started and put them in your windowsill. One project that we like to do every year is with parsley. We start them in the sill, just on the windowsill, then put them in the garden, and the swallowtails come. So we like to raise swallowtails every year, which is really fun. You can see them go through their little instar processes on the parsley once we put them outside, and then we have swallowtail butterflies every year.
Very nice. So I understand that you specialize in something called pollinator perennials. And I think What exactly is a pollinator perennial? Let's start with that.
So those are perennial flowers, and we have the extension here in Illinois has designated pollinator pockets, and that's when you have five or more pollinator-friendly flowers like bee balm and buddleia and echinacea. A lot of these are prairie plants. I'm a new beekeeper, so I'm very keen on having pollinator-friendly flowers for all of our pollinator insects, our native bees and our honeybees and butterflies. And anybody can do this. You can start your seeds now indoors. You can go to one of our great nurseries and or buy plants that are already started. And the perennial flowers mean that you don't have to plant them every year. They'll survive through our zone 5B winters and come up year after year.
What are some of the benefits? Are there environmental benefits to these type of plants?
So many. They will help your soil improve. They're great for the pollinators. You know, as I mentioned, insects and butterflies, and also I think are just great for your mood in general. Who doesn't love walking down the street and seeing all these flowers in full bloom? And they also sequester carbon and put it back into the soil.
And do you have any specific plants? If people are just starting out, you know, they may be feeling a little overwhelmed. Is there something you recommend for people who just kind of want to get into this for the first time?
Well, for people that are just starting, there are some of our native prairie plants are very easy, like echinacea, which coneflower is the common name. Also, there's sedums, so many sedums you can grow. August Joy is one that's very, very easy. Or succulents. A lot of people have succulents in their houses that they've been growing all winter. As soon as it gets a little warmer, you can just pop them outside. Bulbs come up year after year. If you got bulbs or you're going to give some of the bulbed house plants for Easter, you can put those outside when it gets a little warmer, and they'll come up year after year.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to The 21st. We're speaking with Ella Maxwell, a horticulturalist at Hare Nursery in Peoria, and that was just Annette Donnelly, a volunteer master gardener and naturalist at the University of Illinois Extension. If you have any questions for our guests, please give us a call, 800-222-945. You can also tweet us at 21st Show. Ella, I want to ask, your nursery and garden center, Hare Nursery, is closed right now. It's not, I guess, considered an essential business. But are there places people can still get plants or seeds?
Oh, yeah, there are. We are actually open to commercial sales, and our stone market is open for bark deliveries and, like, soil pickups, but we can't be open with our garden center with retail customers. But the big box stores do have plant material. They are able to be open. There's been seeds in the stores for the last 2 months now. Certainly can still order online. And as far as working outside, because I'm on a limited work schedule now, my garden has never really looked better because I've had time to, you know, clean off and tidy up and label and mulch. And, you know, I'm working outside because I don't want to sit in my house and worry about things.
Yeah, yeah. What about for people who maybe want to get started indoors, Ella? Do you have any recommendations for getting started with indoor gardening?
Oh, certainly. As far as indoors goes, there's lots of houseplants. So if you haven't really gardened with houseplants before, most of them in your home, the temperatures are just perfect for the houseplants. You don't have to worry about cooling or anything, but it's light and water. And those are the two things that you have to, you know, over time you'll become more proficient with. Most of the houseplants that you see in the stores, you want to make sure that you read the label. They are low light tolerant, and the quality of the light inside the home, the poorest quality is you know, in the center of the room. So you want to locate these by the window or, you know, on the windowsill. So there's a lot of houseplants you can grow. Watering, I recommend a schedule. I put a calendar on my fridge, and I usually, most of my plants just need watering once a week. There are some other ones maybe a little bit different. But if you really are getting into gardening now, just like Annette said, with the herbs that are already started to grow that you can find at the grocery store, you can repot those. But you can also start a lot of seeds. And one thing that you can check is the internet has tremendous amount of information, but microgreens, that's something that I've grown. You can just use a small volume of soil. You use a lot of seeds, and what you're doing is you're sprouting them, and then within most of them take less than a week to germinate, and then you're eating these sprouts with your salad. They could be like beet greens, could be chard, radishes, different things like that. You're just eating the green part. You can just snip them off with the scissors, and, you know, you've added something to your diet.
And it sounds like it could save people a trip to the grocery store at this time when we're trying to minimize that.
Not enough there, but...
well, maybe not then.
You can purchase a lot of these seeds, you know, packages where you're getting them, you know, so many, four for a dollar or maybe a dollar a package. And it's just kind of fun to do. And then you can compost them after you probably can cut them twice. But I think the microgreens are kind of fun. And, of course, I've started some tomatoes now to set out for later. You can start peppers. You probably would have already wanted to start some of the cold crops like cabbage and kale and things like that, but you can still do that. There's going to be plenty of time.
Annette, do you have any advice about any easier herbs to grow, either indoors or outdoors?
I think just like she said, there's a lot of things you can start. You can start basil. Chives are a fun one. You can start some vegetables if you've got small children, you know, like beans, bush beans, with a wet cotton ball in a plastic bag so that kids can see them sprout before you put them into a little pot with soil and, you know, finish growing them indoors. There's just a lot of really fun things that you can do, especially now that a lot of us are homeschooling our kids and working at home. Right, trying to juggle a lot of different things at the same time. I think that there are some really fun things that you can do that are just simple, and nature is just wondrous. And so if we can find a way to incorporate some of these activities and watch some of these things happen just on our kitchen windowsill, it's really a neat thing to do.
That was volunteer master gardener and naturalist with the University of Illinois Extension, Annette Donnelly. We've also been joined by Ella Maxwell, a horticulturalist at Hare Nursery in Peoria. I want to thank you both so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Such a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
That is the time we have for today's 21st show. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to be interviewing the President of the Illinois Senate, Don Harmon, on what is next for the Illinois General Assembly, which essentially has had its spring session largely derailed so far by the coronavirus. Also want to make a note, yesterday on our program, we had a reporters roundtable. One of the panelists was Molly Parker with a Southern Illinoisan newspaper. She mentioned that she is one of three reporters covering 16 counties in Southern Illinois. And they've been doing great work down there and in difficult circumstances. Unfortunately, this morning she tweeted that she and her colleagues have been issued furlough notices. So now that means that there'll be two reporters instead of three. The difficulties faced by local media at this time when we need news more than ever is something that we are going to be continuing to follow here on the show. If you have thoughts about that or anything else, please get in touch with us. We're putting together a gallery of people's quarantine projects. We just talk about gardening, but people are doing all kinds of other things. Home improvement, baking bread, maybe picking up an instrument they haven't played in a while. Please send us your photos. You can email those to talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. You can also tweet us at 21st Show. Please use the hashtag StayAtHomeIL. You can also find our show on our website, 21stshow.org. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, NPR One. Just search for The 21st. Our program is produced by Libby Foster and Anna Casey. Eunice Alpison is our intern. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Special thank you to the band Public Access for our theme music. I'm Brian Mackey. This is The 21st. Thanks for listening.